Hello and welcome to the Texas Energy Lab on Austin's Talk 1370, covering sustainability and innovation across the Lone Star State. Brought to you by our title sponsor here, Freedom Solar. Leading the solar revolution in Texas, you can find out information about how you can go solar at freedomsolarpower.com. You can listen to this podcast as well as others at our show website, Texas Energy Lab, txenergylab.com. I'm your host in the studio, Kyle Frazier, here with my co-host, Tim Duffy, who just loves to introduce our guests. So I'm going to pass it over to him so he can do just that.
Thanks, Kyle. It's my favorite job. And today I'm really excited to introduce John Pitts Jr. of the Texas Star Alliance. He's also a lobbyist for the Texas Solar Power Association. Welcome. And hey, why don't we start off by just giving us a sense of, you know, who you are and your background.
Great. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me today. Excited to be on here with you. I've been involved in the public affairs, legislative lobby world, started working on the Capitol in college, and have been in and around it for some degree in some form or fashion ever since. So that's been 20-ish years,
nice.
Give or take.
Wow.
Started off just generally working on campaigns, primarily for Republicans, statewide and legislative districts around the state. Did some time in D.C. at one point on the political side. Started focusing on policy-specific issues starting in 2003. Very shortly, I was introduced to the Texas Renewable Energy Industries Association, which you guys and many of your listeners might be very familiar with. TREO was one of the first organizations back in the, I think 1980 was when they were founded, one of the first organizations to really focus on sustainability issues, renewable energy, et cetera, from a policy standpoint, from a legislative standpoint. I was a lobbyist for them for several years in the mid-aughts.
Mm-hmm.
And then after several years of that, I really enjoyed, I started doing more work. I was looking to do more work with companies and other interests in that space. Because of my policy background, I started doing work with companies who were interested in where the markets are going based on policy, as we all know. Especially electric markets are governed largely by state policy and national policy. And so companies were asking me to help them figure out where states were going. This was the heyday of RPSs,
yeah,
and whatnot.
Yeah.
So people would say,
which is what RPS is?
A renewable portfolio standard, which is a policy that says thou shalt go produce X amount of your power from renewables by a certain date. And Texas was one of the leaders in that conversation back under then Governor George Bush. When the market was restructured here in Texas to go to a deregulated market,
yeah.
One of the principal policies going forward was that Texas would have an RPS, which was expanded a couple times, but we actually quickly met that goal back in 2005, excuse me. We met our 2015 goals 10 years early.
Wow.
And we've just been, you know, on a tear ever since.
Which was largely driven by what? What was the main contributor to that? Was it?
The RPS said thou shalt generate X number of megawatts by a certain date, and wind was by far the cheapest renewable resource at the time.
Mm. Yeah.
And they quickly came in and met those goals because they had the ability to, because they were so cost competitive at the time. Natural gas prices at the time were starting to really go up, and so wind was able to come in. Not only were utilities and others being told, you have to buy this type of power, a certain percentage, but as I said, we blew past those initial mandates very quickly because it became so cost competitive compared to natural gas and other technologies. From a career trajectory standpoint, I was being brought into companies who were saying, based on state market policies, et cetera, tell us about New Jersey SREC markets, which were a big deal back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on in California? Where's Texas going to go? And so I really enjoyed getting a taste of the business side, the strategic side, from where companies were planning on going, putting their investment. And so decided to try to move over to that side. So I started doing some independent development work, actually, which is an interesting way to spend your money if you don't have someone backing you. But ultimately, through that experience, landed at SunPower when SunPower was really launching a national development. This is large-scale, wholesale solar project development, or utility scale, as it's often called, efforts. And before they had a presence in Texas, they brought me on as a remote employee. This was 2010. To look at focusing on project development and business development origination with utilities and similar. in Texas, New Mexico, and ultimately I did some work for them in Mexico and South America. Was that
a full transition out of the policy world into the business world, or were you kind of trying to do both, or did you have to sort of leave that behind for a period of time?
I did have to leave that behind, which I was really looking to jump into the deep end from a business standpoint to really understand this space and really get that experience. Because of my policy background, I ended up doing some work with the policy team as they were looking at what policy levers existed in Texas or could exist in Texas. Yeah. So I worked with the policy team, but my day-to-day was 98% focused on the business side of things, which is exactly what I was looking to do. But after 4 years of that, I kept being pulled back into the policy arena and my brain kept going back to that conversation. And so after 4 years of doing that, I jumped back out to the policy side. Tim, you mentioned my background or my current experience representing the Texas Solar Power Association, right. TSPA. While I was at SunPower was one of the founding members of TSPA. And so when I transitioned out into the policy side, I started working with TSPA from that side of things. And I've been doing that ever since. So that was about 5 years ago.
And how does TSPA differ from TRIA, for example?
Definitely. And I don't want to speak on TRIA's behalf, but TRIA has been from the beginning a broad industry segment within the organization. It's the renewable energy industries.
Which could be geothermal and solar thermal and wind and solar.
Exactly. And we were doing biofuels when I was there. I don't know how much they're spending, what kind of focus they have on that now, but we were doing a lot of space. This was, again, in the mid-aughts, the ethanol, biodiesel, those were huge, huge deals. And so we spent a lot of time in that, as well as wind, solar, geothermal, et cetera. So it's a big, broad bucket of things. And they still, I think, do a lot of work with all of the above. They haven't had a direct legislative presence in a couple of years. And so TSPA was not started to compete with or similar. It was the solar industry was getting to a point where it, maturity-wise, to have it needed to have its own voice from the specific industry's perspective. And Wynn did that with the Wynn Coalition a number of years before that. A lot of those companies stayed active in TRIA. Just like I know there are solar companies that are still active in TRIA. But the idea for Wynn at one point and then solar at another point was it's time for this industry to have its own specific industry face.
Well, that's
voice.
A great sign, and it's big enough to support that type of deal.
Exactly.
Well, so let's cut to a break. We got to stop there, and we'll be right back with John Pitts just after these messages.
The life I love is making music with my friends. I can't wait to get off-road again.
Welcome back. We're with Talk 1370 AM on the Texas Energy Lab. You can find us at txenergylab.com, and we're here today with John Pitts. John, when we were speaking before the break, we were talking about your current involvement in the TSPA. And so I think what we want to do is kind of jump to today and see. I know you guys just started session a couple of weeks ago. You know, what's on the table? What's the approach? And where are we headed here?
Definitely. So, again, TSPA, Texas Solar Power Association, was founded about 5 years ago with the idea that the industry is at a maturity level that it needs its own industry face, its own voice, because there's policies that specifically affect this industry in ways that they don't affect others. And partly that's because solar is unique in that it has the distributed and large-scale centralized power plant designs available and deployment available. So it has its own unique characteristics, which means policy affects it in different ways. So the association was founded with the basic idea that solar has the ability to compete and grow in the competitive market that exists here in Texas. It's not about needing a step-up government help, a handout from government. It's not about we need an incentive to grow. It's not about we need another mandate to grow. The industry is mature enough and competitive enough to grow on its own as long as policy continues to not be negative.
Sure.
Or if there are places where policy is negative, address that fact. So this is our third legislative session as an association. Our first two sessions, we have passed several bills, proactive bills, mostly on the DG side, the retail side of the market, where we have seen barriers to entry, whether that's excessive permitting, excessive costs, homeowners association saying you can't put solar on your house. We look at plan policies like that that exist, whether it's at state level or local level, but that has some type of state governance, and to say where are barriers to entry, where's friction in the market that we can take away to allow consumers to go solar, from whether it's someone wanting to put it on their house or a business on their roof, whether it's a large company wanting to buy power directly from an offsite solar project, or just general wholesale people wanting to build large-scale systems and sell into the market. So our guiding principles are around making sure there are not barriers to entry, or where there are, lessen those to the degree possible. So coming in this session, we are optimistic, both because the cost of solar continues to get to a point where you see diversification in the market, not only between wholesale and retail, but also geographically around the state. You're seeing it grow in all sorts of places geographically, which means we can talk, our story to legislators becomes one, it's not, oh, well, this is happening in West Texas for large scale, or this is happening in Austin, San Antonio, where they've had local rebate programs, but this is happening in East Texas on both a retail and a wholesale side. This is happening in South Texas. And so that allows us to talk to legislators wherever they're from, not just, this is good for the state, even though it doesn't happen in your district. Now it's, this is happening more and more in your district, which is really exciting. It makes it more real. And what we've found pretty consistently since day one is legislators pretty much across the spectrum, political spectrum, the ideological spectrum, aren't against solar. They have ideological issues around mandates and incentives, but they're not against solar for being solar, and they appreciate the diverse resource, the fact that we can go and be deployed in multiple ways. They, Republicans and conservatives appreciate the fact that we can allow consumers to have more energy independence on their own, control their own energy destiny. People across the spectrum see, you know, how large-scale solar is bringing the helping keep the cost of electricity down for consumers across the board. We're starting to see large industrial and commercial entities, including companies like Exxon, Shell, and others. There's a refinery being built in far west Texas called the company's MMEX. They are building or buying large amounts of solar themselves because they see how it's going to keep their cost of electricity stable and low for a long, long time. And so that story resonates amongst people across the ideological spectrum, which makes our job more fun because we're not trying to convince you, oh, you need to help us because we need the help. It's, we're all working together to keep prices low, to keep the energy consumer, give them more options, flexibility. And that message by itself is relatively universally popular.
Yeah, you know, control your own energy destiny. I love that phrase.
Yeah. You know, I've heard a statistic, and you can kind of tell me if this resonates with what you're seeing. And it hits on what you said, that this has become not just district by district, but really the whole state is seeing this growth in solar. Is that every hour another homeowner adds solar, like so that's 24 a day, right? Every hour of every day, one new person goes solar. And so does that resonate with what you are seeing yourself, or does that surprise you in any way, or is that about what you've seen?
Yeah, I hadn't heard the specific statistic before, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Just as we look at overall growth trajectories, a lot of, and especially in the capital, more attention is paid to the wholesale side because people are more focused on what's the overall portfolio look like? Do we have enough power to keep the lights on, et cetera? So that distributed piece doesn't get lost because it's very resonant politically. But as we watch those numbers tick up, those numbers aren't tracked as closely as the wholesale numbers are. Because ERCOT, one, doesn't have the same visibility into the distribution grid as they do the wholesale side. But they're always tracking like, what are big power plants doing. But when we do get updates on those numbers, it's always growing steadily, which is fantastic.
So we've got about a minute and a half before the next break, but I'm curious, you know, as you talk about the wholesale side and the capacity that our grid has to meet peak demand in the summer and retiring of coal plants and all that, how do you see renewables sort of stepping in to replace the loss of capacity that we're seeing from retiring coal?
Yeah, retiring coal is a real thing. It's not because of any specific environmental policy now. It's because it's typically expensive to operate. And that's a very real thing. The regulators are watching that. And right now they're seeing solar, wind's been growing and it's still growing quickly, but especially for that on-peak time of day, that summer on-peak resource, that's where the critical needs are for the state, and they're seeing solar start to really rapidly grow, which the regulators are telling us, thank you, please keep doing that.
Which is great to hear, when regulators are backing that up. Well, thanks for that. We're going to cut to a quick break. We'll be right back here with John Pitts after these messages.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. That I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road.
And you're listening to Talk Radio 1370 AM and the Texas Energy Lab. You can find us at txenergylab.com. We're back with John Pitts of the Texas Star Alliance and the Texas Solar Power Association. You know, when we left the break, we were kind of segueing into what the future of energy independence kind of looks like in the state of Texas, among other things. I know you're a man of many hats, though. You're involved in healthcare and education a little bit as well. Can you give us just a little bit of your experience there and kind of what else you're doing?
Sure, thanks. My portfolio, as it were, is pretty broad. Solar has been my focus in the energy space for a long time, and it continues to be. But outside of that, I do a fair amount of work in the education, both higher ed and K-12. I've specifically done a lot of work in STEM curriculum, so expanding STEM curriculum across the state. Higher ed, looking at new delivery solutions for non-traditional students. Healthcare, do a lot of work looking at new solutions for different kinds of populations that don't have access to coverage, but all through the lens of we're a conservative state. We need to figure out ways that we can continue moving the ball forward under the political and legislative world that we live in, which is fun. It's fun to take issues that, and solar is a good example, take issues that have traditionally been, at least in the public sphere, been labeled as one belonging to one political party and looking at all of the commonality there are between the political parties for certain issues. Mm. So solar might have adherence on both sides of the aisle, potentially for different reasons, but that doesn't mean it's not valid for both sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
As I said earlier, a lot of the conversation around private property rights, people wanting to own their own, control their own energy destiny, that message resonates with a lot of people some people might say, oh, those people don't like solar because of the way they vote. That's not true, and we need to break out of those structures because there are so many things that we all see as problems and challenges for the state that people on both sides of the aisle are trying to figure out, which is really neat. Oh, and I also have done a lot of work in the medical cannabis space, which is always a fun dinner party conversation.
Oh, wow. Yeah, now we're talking. Okay, transitioning the show here. Cannabis in Texas.
Yeah, so in 2015 in today, I represent the Epilepsy Foundation of Texas, and on their behalf, we created the first medical cannabis program for people with epilepsy, and we're always looking to, based on research and science, are there other directions we can take that? It's not about other states have said, oh, this is great for everybody, let's go do it. Texas has been very measured, looking at, based on the research, based on the science, where other populations have the research to show that it's effective, and if and when we have that research, then let's talk about what that coverage looks like.
I feel like we could have a whole show on that. Yeah. We'll have to have you come back to talk about. So, you know, energy is ubiquitous, right? Everybody that you're talking about here or that you advocate for on the policy side consumes energy and is exposed to energy, right? It's just one of the things that is a cost of doing business anywhere. In Texas, it's been extremely low. It's been a very inexpensive market to buy power, one of the cheapest in the country. Probably in the world, I'd have to say that's not subsidized. But what do you see as the future for energy costs in Texas? Right, we know that cheap natural gas is a big part of this, but also, do you believe at some point in the not too distant future there'll be other things that get priced into the kilowatt hour that we pay, like infrastructure costs or water, this whole water energy nexus, and or do you see us staying pretty pegged to this? Fuel cost is kind of the determinant for what we pay for power.
Yeah, and this is can get it super technical and out of my league pretty quickly. But the fuel cost is becoming a smaller portion of the charge, only because as industry grows outside of traditional urban areas, that requires more transmission to be built, and those transmission costs are passed along to all consumers equally. In Texas, when we deregulated the market, made that decision from a market structure standpoint because we continue to believe that what's good for West Texas is good for all Texas. What's good for East Texas is good for all Texas. What's good for Dallas, Houston, Austin, San Antonio is good for all Texas. And so it's just because you're building, I mean, ERCOT's building causing a tremendous amount of transmission to be built right now in West Texas because of the oil and gas operations, which I think people would all agree is good for all Texans,
sure.
Which is why we all help shoulder the cost for that. Because there's so much activity going on in non-traditional areas, or not outside of urban areas, that's caused new transmission to need to be built, which means that we're all helping to pay for that. But I think everyone would agree that from an purely economic development standpoint, wealth creation standpoint in the state, that benefits everybody. So that's why the system works the way it does. So because fuel is so cheap, because of the cost of natural gas staying low for so long, it's starting to become a lower percentage of the total bill than it used to be. Mm. So we'll see how that continues. I don't see the price of natural gas spiking anytime soon, but if I was able to predict the price of natural gas, I would
be a very wealthy man.
Yeah, I'd be in a different business. But I don't think anyone's expecting any spikes in the near future. Even as we export more natural gas, there's just much more of it coming out of the ground than it is what it is. So the policy side, have been conversations for the past 4 or 5 years around should the regulators do more to inject into themselves into the market price. And that is, you know, other states have what's called a capacity market, which you get paid something just to build an asset and leave it there, even if you don't turn it on or off. That's been very unpopular in Texas politically and continues to be. I don't see that changing anytime soon. The PUC, the regulators, have taken steps to insert other types of price adders. So in times of scarcity, that's typically, you know, July or August afternoon, they have the ability to, there are adders in there that automatically trigger to help raise the price even more than they might otherwise, to incentivize people to have more power online at those times. Just this past week, the PUC voted to slightly tweak that again to increase that a little bit, but enough, they believe, that can add enough of a price adder to attract more power. But what this means for solar is important. Because we are building at scale across the state without any mandates or incentives and without the price adders, any new price adders being put into the system, because of the demand from corporate entities, because of the demand from consumers, and because we are now cost competitive in the wholesale market, ERCOT is now projecting that we are really the only or almost the one of the only technologies that's going to grow in a significant way at peak over the next few years. Now, wind is continuing to build at a very strong clip, which is fantastic, and more that's happening on the coast, which is more on peak than West Texas. And so when we talk about coal plants closing down, those wind facilities do a lot to fill in those gaps. Mm. But ERCOT's projecting right now, based on no policy changes, no new support, and no new barriers to entry, that we'll go from about 1% of the wholesale market to about 5% of the wholesale market over the next 3 years alone.
Wow.
And that is the only thing that's growing at that rate on peak. And they expect right now their reserve margin, which is how much extra they have at any given time, to go from 7% up to 11%. And that is about the same amount of percentage points that solar is growing. So they really see solar at filling that gap. And they're not telling us, you better turn on. They're just saying, please keep doing what you're doing because it is a valuable addition to the grid. It's a valuable addition to grid reliability, making sure the lights stay on in those peak times during the summer.
Well, John, that's super helpful for us mm-hmm. to hear. And we're out of time. So we're going to have to end it there. But thanks for joining us today, yeah. John Pitts from the Texas Star Alliance, and also the lobbyist for the Texas Solar Power Association. It's done a lot of good work for the Texas solar industry. Thanks again for coming on the show. Thank you for listening to the Texas Energy Lab. You can listen to this episode as well as others at txenergylab.com.
I can't wait to get off road again. On the road again. places that I've never been.